In the last 5 years, Maine's lobstermen have claimed a bonanza. The annual harvest has exceeded 120 million pounds, six times that of the harvest from the 1980s, unheard of in coastal fisheries. Yet the oversupply of lobster has prompted a drop in price, so lobstermen must work even harder than before. But how long can this boom last? Can the Maine coast, reliant as it is on the seafood industry, survive it? In the new book, The Last Lobster, Boom or Bust for Maine's Great Fishery, Christopher White, the author of Skipjack and The Melting World, examines the curious boom in America's beloved lobster industry and predicts its probable crash. Again, the name of the book is The Last Lobster, and it's a pleasure to welcome Christopher White to the roundtable this morning. Christopher, thank you very much for being with us.
Good morning, Joe. Thank you for having me.
What brought you to this particular subject? Given that you've written a lot about science, a lot about the environment, what brought you to the lobster?
The last book that I did on commercial fishermen was a book called Skipjack about the sailing oystermen of Chesapeake Bay, and their main problem was overfishing. And then I did a book on glaciers called The Melting World, and that, of course, was about climate change. And I thought, wouldn't it be interesting to put those two subjects together to actually do a story that covered climate change and commercial fishing at once? And so I looked around for interesting stories, and of course the story in the Gulf of Maine caught my eye immediately because of they were having a very unusual situation in that they had rather than a crash going on like most fisheries around the world, they were having a boom.
So talk a little bit about that situation, because it had been at a crash point for a while, correct?
Years ago it was, but you have to look at different parts of New England to see different stories. In Long Island Sound, there has been a crash for about 15 or 16 years, and then Rhode Island had a crash a few years later. More recently, Massachusetts has been in trouble, and it looks like the issue of ocean warming has been crawling up the New England coast and is heading for Maine.
So when you look at what's happening in Maine right now, what is the status of the lobster right now?
The boom that the lobsters in Maine have been in, which began in 2012 and continued through 2016, meant that there were 120 million pounds of lobster being caught for those 5 years, which is six times the normal rate that they were catching in the 1980s. It's really unheard of in coastal fisheries to have that sort of a boom or a glut of a fishery. And the scientific community all during that boom were predicting that there was going to be a crash. So I was interested in looking into why were the scientists predicting that there was going to be a crash and would it occur. And what happened was in 2017, last year, the fishery decreased by 16%. It went from 132 million pounds down to 110 million pounds. They lost 22 million pounds in the fishery, which was a huge hit on lobstermen. It meant that they lost an awful lot of money.
But is it a crash? Is 16% a crash?
Not yet. But what happens if we have another 15 or 16% loss this current summer, 2018, and maybe in 2019? So it's cumulative. You know, it takes a few years to really say we definitely have a crash. But we did definitely have a downturn in 2017 when we lost 16% of the fishery.
So before we get to the crash, let's talk about the boom. And you write about this, that there are many theories for the boom. What are some of those theories? And you take us aboard many of the lobster boats in Maine to find out their theories about the boom. So what do we know about why there was such a spike?
Yeah, well, it's interesting because you get very different opinions from fishermen or lobstermen than you do from scientists. But one thing that they agreed on was that maybe something was going on with the predators in the Gulf of Maine, because cod and other ground fish, which were overfished over the last 20 or 30 or 40 years, meant that there were so few cod around, which are traditional predators of baby lobsters, that perhaps lacking that predator pressure meant that the lobsters were able to increase in population size. So that was the first one, and everyone was pretty unanimous, lobsters and scientists alike, that that was probably a contributor of some kind. But then over the last 10, 15 years or so, there were other signs that were pointing to ocean warming. For example, I mean, first of all, it's important to realize that lobsters, like all marine species, are very tied in to the temperature of the seawater. And all of their life cycle is dependent upon that temperature. So what we were seeing over the last 10 years was early molting, which meant that lobsters were molting their shells in June rather than July or August. They were doing repeat molting, which meant that they were shedding their shells more than once in the summer. And then most importantly, perhaps, there was early maturation. The younger females that were coming aboard the boats that traditionally they would throw back because they were too small were actually fertile and ready to reproduce. So if you have a younger population reproducing, you can imagine what that does to the population size. If humans were reproducing at the ages of 8, 9, and 10, we'd have more than 8 billion people on the Earth.
For those men and women on those lobster boats in Maine, what do they make of the science? How do they process that when they hear about a coming boom or a coming bust?
Well, it varies. I mean, there is no one answer to that. I think, though, there is an age stratification to a degree. The three main characters that I followed through a year in the life of the fleet ranged in ages quite a bit. So my oldest character, Frank, who's 63, is more conservative and not embracing of the idea that ocean warming is going to hurt the lobster population as much as, say, his stepson, Jason, who is 44 and went to community college, majored in biology, and is much more open to the concept of ocean warming and climate change. So it varies from person to person quite a bit.
You bring this point out in the book, but I think it's one that is important to talk about, and that is, with a decline that we saw last year, is that the lobstermen are depending on these large catches. So is that isn't sustainable any way you look at it, is it?
No, it really isn't, and it kind of comes in a couple different forms. I mean, first of all, the lobster now, because they've been catching so many lobster through this boom, lobster is now makes up 80% or more of the main fisheries, of all main fisheries, in terms of dollar value, which means that the watermen, the lobstermen, are totally dependent or almost totally dependent upon lobster. And if the lobster goes south, well, then where are they? You know, what are they going to possibly do? And they've invested so much in this boom. Lobstermen, especially the younger lobstermen, have bought bigger boats, invested in larger crews, bought bigger trucks, bigger homes. They're in hock to the banks. And if the lobsters do continue to decrease, if it goes from a 16% loss last year, and it goes over 20% this year, and continues in that direction, then banks are going to start foreclosing on them.
So let's go to the climate change angle of this. So where are the lobsters going? And they're moving north because the water is colder there, right?
Yes, it's really remarkable. This is something that I discovered that I didn't know much about when I got into this story, but There's a professor at Rutgers University named Malin Pinsky, who, when he was a graduate student at Princeton University, he did a study, or a survey rather, of 360 marine species along the North Atlantic, and he discovered that all of them were moving north, every one of them, but at different, what he calls climate velocities, different movements north. And so the American lobster he tracked for 40 years from 1968 to 2008 and found that it was moving about 4.3 miles per year, or about 43 miles per decade, which means that the center point of the lobster population, which was off of New Jersey, off of Island Beach actually, 1968 is now off Boston. And within the Gulf of Maine, the subpopulation of lobsters that live in the Gulf of Maine have moved from off of Portland around Casco Bay, and they've moved up north to Penobscot Bay or Stonington, which is where I centered my work.
When that happens and the lobstermen are immediately affected, talk about the impact that has on Maine's economy, because it is vacation land after all.
Well, it is. I mean, there are all sorts of synergistic effects of the economy with seafood off the coast of Maine. And so while the seafood take itself is about 5 or 10% of Maine's economy, there's much more to it than that when you look at restaurants, trucking, tourism. I mean, everyone all the tourists that go from, me included, that go to Maine for the summer, are looking at a lobster dinner as a key part of that experience. And so people really can't imagine going to Maine and not having a lobster dinner. And so what would it be like if there wasn't a lobster dinner to be had? That's a terrible thought.
So with this crash, you write about how lobstermen are now left with boats that are bigger than they need. They have trucks that they don't need. They have homes that are predicated on the fact that they're going to catch more lobsters than they do, and they are having a tough time.
They are. And it's just starting to show because, you know, 2017 was the first dip or downturn from the boom, and we'll have to see what happens in the next year or two. But they're definitely fearful. The lobstermen keep a lot close to the chest. But they began to speak to me a couple of years ago about their fears about lobstering. There's a scene in the autumn chapter of my book when I'm out with a lobsterman named Julie Eaton, who is one of the few Maine lobstermen who's a woman. And I'm working with her, and she says, "Chris, well, you know, the thing that we fear most, we as lobstermen fear most, is coming out here one morning and finding nothing in our traps." And so that's a big fear of theirs, and they're beginning to talk about it more and more.
The Gulf of Maine, you report, is a hot spot, warming faster than 99% of all the world's seas. Anyone who has ever been to Maine in August perhaps would disagree with that. However, it is happening.
Right, right. It's all relative, right?
That's right. It is all relative. But it is warming. And so what makes it a hot spot?
I don't know the answer to that off the top. I mean, the ocean currents and ocean temperature regimes are so complex. And I think that there are mathematical models that oceanographers use to predict these things. But they've just had temperature gauges. You know, the interesting thing is I was interested in finding out about how the temperature had changed in the Gulf of Maine when I first started to do this story. And I discovered that Maine has had thermometers on the buoys out in the Gulf of Maine ever since the Civil War. Now, obviously, they're not the same thermometers, and they've improved their thermometers, but they had prototype thermometers way back in 1865, and they know that the temperature in the Gulf of Maine generally, average-wise, has increased about 2 degrees Fahrenheit through those years.
It is a fascinating book about a fascinating subject, The Last Lobster, Boom or Bust for Maine's Greatest Fishery. It leaves us with a question mark, and there certainly are a lot of question marks, and this book asks a lot of questions, answers a lot of questions, and really is fascinating. The Last Lobster, it is published by St. Martin's Press. Christopher White, a great pleasure to have you on the program. Thank you so much for sharing with us.
Thanks so much, Joe.
You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.